Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's Veterans Day, and a new generation of soldiers, female soldiers, Marines, flyers, and sailors, are coming home from war. And more than ever, they have been in the thick of it in Iraq and Afghanistan, in conflicts without clear front lines, where old distinctions of combat and non-combat troops are hard, often impossible to uphold, and women are seeing all kinds of action. And they're bringing home what they saw. This hour, On Point, from the new battlefronts, American women as soldiers, fighters, veterans. You can join the conversation, female veterans. Tell us about your experience at war, in Iraq, in Afghanistan. Tell us about going, fighting, surviving. Tell us about coming home. Joining me first today from Baghdad is Tina Sussman, Baghdad Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. She's just returned from 3 days embedded with a U.S. military unit. Tina Sussman, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Tina, where have you just been and what have you seen?
Well, I actually spent the last few days out and about with the military here in Baghdad in the northeastern section of the city. And you know, I was out there kind of gauging troops' reactions to the U.S. election, and I actually found myself chatting with quite a number of female troops, just because that is one of the constants you see here whenever you're out on an embed. And there's just an awful lot of women out there, and one of the things we tend to talk about is, you know, what you mentioned in your introduction, the fact that there are no clear front lines here. Everywhere is the front line in a place like Baghdad and in a place like Iraq. So, you know, they're out there all the time serving as medics, support troops, what have you, and they're exposed to the same things that the men are exposed to. In fact, I just was counting it up, and I saw that in the Iraq War, 66 service women, U.S. service women, have been killed here.
When you talk as a woman to these U.S. service women, do they talk about their gender status? Does it matter to them? Is it a constant on their mind? I'm a woman, they're men, we're all in the military. Does it disappear in this conflict, Tina?
I think in this conflict, it does tend to disappear, simply in large part because, you know, in the last couple of years in particular, as part of the counterinsurgency tactic introduced here by General David Petraeus, you have the troops living amid the population in these very small bases. They are, you know, they're not out on just the giant forward operating bases on the outskirts of the city. They're living in among the population. They're crowded in there. There's far fewer female soldiers, of course, but, you know, they're there with the guys. And the embeds that I've been on, where I've been around servicemen as well as women, you tend to just kind of forget that there's a difference, to tell you the truth, when everyone is living in such close quarters and so dependent on each other, basically, just for survival here.
And without clear battle lines, I guess it's obvious they're all facing the threats of this war. The roadside bombs, the snipers, you name it. They're carrying their guns. They're on guard equally.
Yeah, they are. I mean, on this most recent embed I was on, we spent about 10 hours doing what's known as a battlefield circulation with a lieutenant colonel in some of the very dicey areas of Baghdad. In fact, in one area we were in, the following day, 31 people were killed in a bombing there. And, you know, the medic that was with us, there's a medic on all these patrols. It was a woman. And, you know, she and I spent quite a lot of time talking about it. And, you know, she said it's, yes, certainly, I guess the policy is that women are not in combat, but in Iraq, simply by being here, you're exposed to combat, in part because, you know, so many of these small bases that I mentioned earlier, where the troops are living in amid the population, come under attack, not as much recently because violence is down, but, you know, a lot of the women who have been killed here have actually been killed not out on patrol, but actually on their own bases when they've come under mortar fire.
Tina, what did the servicemen and servicewomen there have to say to you about the election last week, Barack Obama as president-elect? What were you hearing?
Well, it was kind of interesting. The sense I got was that maybe the military, at least the rank and file, aren't as conservative as a lot of people think. I did a kind of random poll at a base I was at. I just went up to eight different people to ask their opinions, and out of eight, seven of them said that they were glad that Barack Obama had won. Many of them said the reason they felt that way is they just, you know, they were concerned about John McCain's attitude toward Iraq's neighboring states, namely Iran. And they were also concerned that if John McCain became ill or incapacitated, Sarah Palin would not be very good at running the war.
And before we let you go in Baghdad, have you got any sense of your reporting in the last week or 10 days of how the Iraqi government is responding to the imminence of Barack Obama as president of the United States? Do they feel that they'll have to sort of hurry up and, I don't know, get their act together because Obama talks more about taking U.S. troops out?
Well, you could ask every single member of the Iraqi parliament, and you'd get different answers to all of it. Nobody really knows what they're thinking at this point. We're all just waiting to see what happens with this, you know, status of forces agreement that the Iraqi government and the U.S. has to hammer out, which will essentially clear the way for U.S. forces to remain here after the start of next year.
Tina Sussman, Baghdad Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times, joining us from Baghdad. Tina, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
We're talking this hour on Veterans Day about women at war in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're going to hear later in this hour from the director of a new documentary called Lioness, which is premiering on public broadcasting stations, television around the country this week. Let's hear just a little bit of a clip. Here's one of the female soldiers depicted in Lioness, often in this documentary, in serious combat situations. Here's Sergeant Shannon Morgan describing a close call in Ramadi.
We didn't stop. We covered over, I want to say it was like 5 or 7 miles of nothing but insurgents. They were throwing grenades at us and rockets, mortars. Rocket missed me by about that much, yeah.
A rocket missed me, her, by about that much, she says. And here's Shannon Morgan, Sergeant Morgan, talking about what it's like looking down to the gun sights at another human being in war.
It's different when you realize I'm pointing a gun at another human being. And, like, it was the longest, probably second of my entire life. I remember thinking so many things, everything. My life kind of just was going, it seemed like it was coming pieces and bits and pieces here and there, going this whole time. And I remember hesitating, and they told me, if you hesitate, you're dead. And I remember hesitating, because for that second, I was like, God, is this right?
Is this right, she asked. Sergeant Shannon Morgan in the documentary Lioness. We'll hear later in this hour from the director of that documentary. We're talking about American women at war this hour. Joining me right now from Washington is Ann Scott Tyson, Pentagon and military correspondent for The Washington Post. She's been following the issue of women's expanded role in the military for several years. Ann, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Tom.
And joining us from WFCR in Amherst, Massachusetts, is Sergeant Rachel McNeil. She joined the Army Reserves after 9/11 when she was 17, served in Iraq from December 04 to December 05, started out as a heavy equipment operator, then shifted to working security for convoys out of Ramadi in the then highly dangerous Sunni Triangle, found herself in the thick of it. Rachel, thank you very much for being with us.
No problem.
And can you give us a sense of the scale of involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan and how it's different from earlier American wars? Women.
Well, definitely. On one hand, there are about, I think, 11% of the troops over there are females. That's compared to roughly 15% in the military as a whole. Mm-hmm. And what has changed, I think, is the nature of their involvement because of the nature of these wars. Oftentimes, people in the military refer to them as 360-degree wars. You can be attacked, as was commented on from Baghdad, pretty much any time in any place. And so women, as they have gotten into professions such as military police, also many women in the supply areas where they're out on the roads driving vehicles, they really are subject to getting into combat situations at any time. There are also a lot of women medics. But beyond that, because of the need for women to perform certain specific duties, such as searching females in a culturally sensitive situation or treating them medically, they're very desired and sought after by all male infantry units.
They need to have them along. Sergeant McNeil, Rachel, did you did you feel that you were protected from combat in Iraq or regularly exposed to it?
I was regularly exposed to combat. I left the base for over 150 missions, so.
And every time you went out?
Every time we went out, the roads were at risk for IEDs, snipers, anything that they felt like doing with us, so.
These were in convoys. You were often a tail gunner in the convoy, I believe.
I was in the rear or the front, any vehicle, depending where we were at, so.
And just as much as for any male soldier, I guess you were depending on your rifle and your wits.
That's correct.
Every day in Iraq, do you now feel like you've brought it home with you in the same way that we've heard from American men at war for generations? Is it the same for a woman coming home from war?
Well, I definitely think about it a lot. I haven't had too many problems with PTSD or, you know, anything like that. But it's definitely a part of my life, so.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American women at war in Iraq and Afghanistan, talking on this Veterans Day about what they've done, seen, accomplished, endured behind the lines and right on the battlefront. Later in this hour, we'll hear from one of the directors of a new documentary, Lioness, about American women in Iraq in particular. Here's a cut from that film, Major Kate Guttermson, talking about fears that women are going beyond the roles they're legally allowed to fill in Iraq.
There's very gray lines because there's no front lines on what women are doing over in Iraq. A lot of people are concerned about women overstepping or going outside of their legal positions on what they can be doing and what roles they're supposed to be fulfilling in the Army.
We'll talk about those rules and roles. Here's another bit from Lioness Sergeant Rainey Rothig describing raiding a house with Sergeant Shannon Morgan, we heard from earlier, with a team of Marines in Ramadi.
The women and children are all in one room. The men are all in the other. The women and children, they were just panic-stricken because, you know, we were supposed to search them. And finally, Morgan and I took off our helmets. And once they saw we were females, they started trying to talk to us.
More testifying from Iraq there on the role of women in the American military in that conflict, the role of women in the American military today. Ann Scott Tyson is with us from Washington, Pentagon and military correspondent for The Washington Post, has been writing about women in the military for some time now, in these wars in particular. Sergeant Rachel McNeil is with us. She served in Iraq in 2004, 2005. And right now, also joining us from WFCR in Amherst, Massachusetts, is Kirsten Holmstead, author of Band of Sisters, American Women at War in Iraq. Kirsten, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show, and I'd like to say thank you to all our veterans out there.
We all join you in that every day, and on this day in particular. Kirsten, what's your sense of how Americans sort of picture their military in their mind's eye and the reality of it when you add in women at war today?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because I've been all over the country talking to civilian, you know, to the civilian community, businesses, universities, students, and they really don't realize that the face of war has changed and that it's the face is just not male, it's female as well. And I can hear the jaws dropping when I start talking about the role that women are playing in combat. I just don't think people realize it. I think they still think that women are in Kuwait shuffling paper, and as everyone's mentioned already on the show, that they're doing much, much more than that.
Give us some of those pictures that bring people up to date, that really get them attuned to what's actually going on. What kind of scenes do you describe to clue American civilians into what's really going on with American women in the military today?
Sure. Well, the first story in my book is called Schoolhouse Rocks, and it's about Lance Corporal Carrie Blaze and Lance Corporal Priscilla Kispetic, who attached to the infantry, are searching the town of Haditha. They take a break, and they're in this four-story schoolhouse, and the schoolhouse is hit by a couple of RPGs, and a firefight ensues, and Carrie Blaze finds herself in the firefight. And that was a traumatic experience for her, I know, as the lioness women have pointed out in the video. The last story in the book is called Roll With It, and it's about a female Army soldier who's a truck driver who's driving down the road, and the Iraqis had rigged a van with bombs, and just as her truck got up beside the van exploded, and she was seriously wounded. And really, when I was writing this book, I realized that women, you know, we say they're not in combat, but I feel certain that they are in combat. But I didn't realize when I was writing Band of Sisters that how much of the norm this would become, the role of women in combat.
Sergeant McNeil, you've been home from Iraq for a while now. When people come to understand that you served there, what comes to mind for them? Do they understand what you were up against, what kind of situations you were in? Do they believe it when you tell them?
No, I don't think that a lot of people really understand. A lot of them think, okay, so she's a female and she went to Iraq. So they say, oh, so you just, you know, just built stuff, right? You know, like that was mm-hmm. it. And then I say, well, you know, actually we did convoy security. We were in the city of Ramadi. And some people that served in the military, you know, during 2005 in Ramadi instantly understand exactly what we were dealing with. But anyone who wasn't familiar with what was going on was incredibly surprised that of the kind of situations that we were in.
Ann Scott Tyson, in Washington, what is the law when it comes to how American females can be deployed in the military at war, and how is the law kept up or not kept up with the reality of these wars?
Well, there haven't been any legal changes in the span of these wars. There had earlier been a steady opening up of different military occupations to females, so that since the Vietnam War, they've been able to become, for example, combat helicopter pilots. I've interviewed and met some very talented female pilots who fly combat missions in small aircraft where they are coming under direct fire and sometimes have people shot down. They've been able to, you know, be in areas like our military police. Mm-hmm. And so there have been a variety of occupations opened up. It's just that the nature of this combat being, again, sort of all around you has put them more in those combat situations than in previous wars. And that, in some ways, has made the current laws obsolete, as has been pointed out by some research. Because, for example, the law talks about front lines. It talks about whether females can serve in units that routinely, you know, engage in direct combat. But these definitions of, direct combat, front lines, simply do not apply very well to the situations that exist today.
Kirsten, you've talked with women who have been in this and experienced it firsthand. We've got a 1994 policy, women excluded from units at the level of battalion and below that engage in direct ground combat. Why doesn't that work as a line of demarcation, let's say, in Iraq?
Well, it doesn't work because, you know, like she was just saying, the war is a 360 war, and anytime the rifle comes out, you're in the infantry, and I mean, and the rifle's coming out a lot. It's coming out all the time. I mean, you know, Rachel's kind of modest, but I mean, Rachel would drive. She would drive these thunder runs through Ramadi every day, and this road was arguably the most dangerous road in the world at that time. And she was coming under fire every day, and her convoy was hitting IEDs. And how that's combat support and not combat that baffles me.
Rachel, was there any doubt, Sergeant McNeil, in your mind that you were in combat when you were on your thunder runs in Ramadi?
I had no doubt that we were in combat. There wasn't a day that we left the base for those runs that we weren't expecting to be attacked numerous times.
And out of that 100-plus runs you made, how many times were you having to pull the trigger?
I personally never had to pull the trigger. I did a lot more driving. And then when I was in the gunner's position, I never had to actually pull the trigger. Most people kind of obeyed us when we told them to stop, but there were females that served with me who were faced with that decision and ended up having to do it.
And the IEDs we've heard so much about, were they exploding along your route, along your convoys?
They were.
We've got a lot of listeners who want to join this conversation. Ann Scott Tyson, Sergeant Rachel McNeil, Kirsten Homestead, author of Band of Sisters. Please stand by. Let me go to Narragansett, Rhode Island, and Pat. Hi, Pat. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I would just like to see that in our nation that it is the people who make the decision as to whether we want women to go to war. I'm a retired nurse from the military. I've served in both the Air Force and in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we have women who are quite capable, perhaps more so than some of the men, to serve and to do the job. But the issue is not whether they can do it. The issue is whether we as a nation want our women in that position.
How do you feel about it as a military veteran, Pat?
I personally don't think that women should be put in that position. Number one, as a nation, do we really want our women to be in a position to be captured and put in POW camps, as they were in World War II, but those were not as combat troops? Are we willing to accept what inevitably will happen to some of those people?
Rachel,
I'm not quite sure that we are, and I think it's that the public is not aware of it.
Rachel McNeil, Sergeant McNeil, what do you say to Pat, a fellow veteran? She doesn't think women should be in this position, and yet you know very well that they are. What do you say to her, Rachel?
I would say that given the current conflict and the nature of it, the nature of the enemy that we're fighting and the positions that women are serving in that put them in those positions, I feel that the debate about allowing women in combat is sort of late in coming because they're already there. Now it's just a matter of how are we going to deal with this? Is it going to move on to allowing women into actual combat positions, or is it just going to be more focus on the roles we play within our jobs that we're allowed to do overseas?
Kirsten, the women that you interviewed, the veterans of Iraq for Band of Sisters, did they have misgivings about how this war has taken them effectively to the front lines, effectively into combat, or do they see it as natural, as right?
Yeah, Tom, I'm glad you asked me that question. I think of Captain Amy McGrath. She was a captain when I interviewed her. She's a major now. And her feeling about the whole POW situation is, and other women have expressed this, they feel like their bodies are no more or less valuable than the men's bodies, and that they're, and you know, if they become POWs, they just feel like they put themselves in this position and they're willing to take this risk, and they're no more valuable than the men. So I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but I mean, they just feel that it's a risk that they take, and it's okay. I mean, nobody wants to be a POW, but if men can put themselves in this position, then women can too, I think is what they're trying to say.
It's amazing and maybe natural how quickly that kind of camaraderie, that kind of we're all in this kicks in. Pat, thank you very much for your call. Let's get one from John in Dedham, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air.
Hi. Great program. There's a program today at 1 o'clock at the JFK. Jonathan Shea, he treats people with PTSD, and he uses a very unique situation where he talks about Homer. But the point he makes is the rise of PTSD, particularly in modern warfare, and you've covered this in your program many times, Tom, is substantial. And because the nature of the excellent medical care, people are surviving, and because the nature of IEDs and others, the incidence is much, much higher. Now, that's just one factor. Sexual harassment, which was grossly underreported of women in the military, and I've seen reports on it, and that information is not proliferating, makes a very unique situation, and many women in the Navy as well as on the ground in different combat positions are reporting this, and there's plethora of military statistics on it if people want to dig into it. What that leads to is my comment that we're sort of to try, so we don't, and by the way, I'm not against women serving in maybe, you know, as we said, to debrief or to interrogate or in some certain circumstances military police or particularly in the medical units. You know, there's a role there. So it's not that women should be discriminated against and a woman can't do what a man can do. We know women can do what men can do. Mm. The question is, do we want them there doing what? And what is the effect on the Corps? And moreover, why are we glorifying war? We should be looking at the sociological and economic costs. We should be finding ways not necessarily to go to war and not, in this conversation, talk about, well, you know, women can do anything men can do, because we shouldn't be doing it, period, if we can avoid it. There's so many other alternatives to mechanized warfare. There's a role for war, there's a role for the military, but let's be real, the costs are substantial, sociologically, economically, and psychologically.
No question. John, you raise great issues. Thank you very much for your call. Ann Scott Tyson in Washington. Over the summer, we heard a lot about sexual harassment and sexual assault. A big report done found 15% of female veterans were reporting sexual trauma in these recent years. That's pretty high, and perhaps the reality is even higher. How big a problem is that piece in particular, Ann?
Well, it is pretty significant. The most recent report I saw, for example, last year there were about nearly 3,000 reports of sexual assault having happened.
And these are mainly of U.S. troops, female troops, by other American service people, men.
That's my understanding of it. For example, to that point, among the veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, a study I just saw, 17 out of 17,000 female veterans screened, about 16.7% actually screened positive for what they call the sexual trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a significant problem, and one that I think they're working fairly aggressively to deal with, in the sense that they have created different channels for women to report this, so that they don't necessarily have to go to their chain of command, which was seen as a discouraging factor for some women. And I should just note that it's not only women. I mean, there are a small number of men also who are reporting this problem.
Though tiny by comparison. Kirsten, in your first book, you didn't pay a lot of attention in Band of Sisters to sexual harassment, but I think you're working on another where you are giving that more attention. How significant a problem do you see it as?
I see sexual harassment as a huge problem, and I feel that women in the military learn to tolerate sexual harassment or deal with it. My experience has also been that the leadership sets the tone, the leadership in a unit, and if that leader's messing around, then that sends a message down through the unit, and you'll probably find that that's not a very good unit. But definitely it's a problem, and it makes me sick that women are over there fighting and they don't know who the enemy is. They don't know if it's the guy next to them or the Iraqi soldier. I think that's terrible.
And what about our caller John's observation? You know, that he's kind of saying, be careful when you thank and praise women for their role in war. You may end up glorifying war itself as opposed to women sort of stepping into new roles. How do you feel about that, Kirsten?
I want to say that I agree with John 100% as far as, I mean, I don't like war. I wish there weren't a war, and that men didn't have to go, men or women. And I certainly don't want to glorify war. But all these women say, we love our country as much as our brothers in arms, and we want to serve. And if they want to serve, they should be able to serve. And I don't think it should be up to anyone else. I mean, if Rachel wants to serve her country, if she loves her country that much and she wants to serve it, and she can serve it, I think she should be able to.
Kirsten Homestead, Sergeant Rachel McNeil, please stand by. Ann Scott Tyson at the Washington Post, thank you very much for being with us today, Ann.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour on Veterans Day about American women at war in Iraq and Afghanistan, what they've done, seen, accomplished, and endured behind the lines and right on the battlefront. We've been joined by Sergeant Rachel McNeil, served in Iraq in 2004 and 2005, went as a heavy construction equipment operator, shifted to working security on convoys in a very dangerous Ramadi at that time. Kirsten Homestead is with us as well. She's author of Band of Sisters, American Women at War in Iraq. We've been hearing throughout this hour clips from the new documentary Lioness, which will be on PBS stations across the country. I believe it's Thursday this week. We're going to hear in just a moment from the director of that film. Here's a little more. Here's Lieutenant Colonel William Brinkley in Lioness. He helped devise the Lioness program. We'll hear about it. And here he's talking about the gray areas involved in the issue of women in combat.
Did I have female soldiers in battle? Yes. Was the intent of those soldiers to be in battle when they went? Well, I don't know. Probably not. But did battle come to them on occasion? Yeah, it did.
Yes, it did. And here's Sergeant Shannon Morgan one more time, now in this clip, describing her struggles since returning home from her duty in Iraq.
Don't get me wrong. I'm glad to be home, and I'm glad to be alive. But in the same sense, I'm lost, kind of. Because I feel like as soon as I set foot on that place over there, I feel like I lost a part of me. I really do.
I lost a part of me, Sergeant Shannon Morgan, in the documentary film Lioness. One of the director and producer with Daria Summers, Meg McLagan, joins us now from New York. She's a documentary filmmaker and cultural anthropologist who did a great deal of the work in leading this documentary, Lioness. Meg, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I can't wait to see this. The clips that I've heard are really fascinating. What is the Lioness program that you followed, Meg?
The Lioness program was created by the Army, this particular engineering battalion, Colonel Brinkley, you just heard him mm-hmm. talk, in Ramadi, in the Sunni Triangle, in late 2003. There was a need for women to go out with the all-male units, the infantry and the artillery, because they were encountering civilian women and children and on their missions, on their health searches and traffic control points. And so they realized that they would be able to reduce tension and violence by bringing female soldiers along who could then help search and separate off the women and children and go into a separate room with them in the case of house searches. So this was a sort of ad hoc practice that they started, and then it has since spread and become fairly widespread and used across Iraq and across services, the Army as well as the Marines.
It started in the Army, now in the Marines as well. You depicted in the documentary Lioness. You had your premiere on New York's Channel 13 last week and will be shown nationally on PBS in the Independent Lens series this Thursday, November 13th. What kind of circumstances arose out of this, Meg? Should we picture these women as kind of behind the guys coming in when the trouble's all over and things are settled down, or gun in hand in the middle of it? What did you see and hear?
Well, in the beginning, the women started going out on missions that often were not immediately violent. They went to schools and they accompanied the male units. And then there were circumstances in the spring when things heated up in Fallujah. The fighting spread to Ramadi, and at that point the Marines had taken over, and this group fell under the Marines. And they actually got involved then in going in with these units, going into homes. And as you heard Shannon Morgan talk mm-hmm. about her experience, she was actually a saw gunner, so she carried the biggest weapon in this firing team that she ran with the Marines, and was providing cover for folks when they were for the male Marines. And her battle buddy, Rainey Ruthig, who we also heard mm-hmm. from, would go out with her regularly. And once this started to happen, the women were asked to go out multiple times for a number of missions for the rest of their time in Iraq.
Now, we've seen for some time now film of these raids, and they could often be very, very tense, and the gunfire could start up at any moment. When you say providing cover, I assume that could be pretty intense firefight you're talking about.
Yeah, well, in the story that we tell in the film, we talk about a period of a couple of days when the women were taken out with the Marines and were involved in a lot of running battles in downtown Ramadi. So those were actually firefights where they were attacked as they were moving through the downtown area. So that was one thing, and then there was often a lot of tension and real concern when they would go into the homes.
Sergeant McNeil, Rachel, when in your experience and in the experience of your colleagues, comrades, women in the military, when you know combat really breaks open, when it's really a firefight, did you see a difference in the way men and women respond to that situation, or is it all the same once the bullets start to fly?
Once the bullets start to fly, all the women are just like the men. You know, we do our job. We don't stop and think, hey, if we need to get out of this place, am I going to jump in a vehicle as a driver, or am I going to get behind the gun? It's not a thought. You just jump where you're needed. You do what you have to do. You know, you move the wounded just like the men move the wounded. You fire back just like the men fire back if you need to. So
the readiness to fire, any different in men and women in your experience?
No, not in my experience. I think that we're all trained the same. And when we're in a situation where we need to do it, the majority of people are going to do it. Men and women both could hesitate in that position. So it doesn't really have anything to do with gender. It's any hesitation would be about being human.
Let's hear from our listeners from Edinburgh, Virginia. Dan is on the air with us. Dan, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. I'm a Marine Corps veteran. I had 3 tours in Vietnam, and I was on active duty during Desert Storm. And my feelings are that women have no place in combat, and I believe historically it's been proven. Women were used extensively by the Russians in World War II. Something like 20,000 of them were captured, and none of them came back by the Germans. So historically, women are treated much differently than men when they're POWs, and the people are missing the point of political correctness more than anything else that keeps this question out. But if you look at the VA records, 3 times as many women discharged with disabilities from the armed forces than men. And even though the disability ratings are much higher now than they were in Vietnam, with almost 30% of the men coming out more than Vietnam with disabilities, I don't think warfare has changed that much.
Dan, your line is breaking up on us a little bit, though. But there's Kirsten. You hear our caller Dan saying, in his view, it's just wrong. It's political correctness having women in war, and he's saying women come home with many more disabilities than men. I don't have the numbers on that in front of me. What about his core assertion there, Kirsten?
Yeah, I'm not sure if women come back with more disabilities. You know, women talk more, and maybe they're reporting. They have a higher rate of reporting disability than the men do, and I could see that happening. But as far as women coming back with more disabilities, my experience in researching my next book, which is about women transitioning home, mm-hmm. is that women are very resilient. You know, people underestimate women. I really think they underestimate how strong women are emotionally, mentally, and oftentimes even physically. And I mean, as far as whether women are over there right now because it's politically correct. I mean, I don't know what to say about that.
I guess that's for the whole country to consider. We do know from the study that came out last summer that those women who face sexual assault or harassment have much higher PTSD levels than generally in the military. Nearly half of those that study found. Let's go to Georgia. We have an anonymous caller from Georgia. Looks like a National Guard veteran. Georgia caller, hi. You're on the air. Thank you very much for calling in.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
What do you know?
Well, let's see. I was assigned to an infantry line unit in Iraq in 2005 to 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quite shocked that I ended up in an infantry line unit. I was a medic. But actually, I hold MOS as a nurse as well, so I was surprised they didn't use me in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But they were insistent that I stay in that infantry line unit. And at first, I wasn't allowed to go out. And they wanted to use me in an office situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a degree, and I could work in an office if I liked. But I was a medical, and I loved what I did.
Okay.
And so I actually told them, absolutely no, send me out. I will risk my life. And
so you were with the troops when they were on patrol, when they were under fire, you were there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I never came under fire, but I did go out, and, you know, I treated people. I treated many Iraqis. I also volunteered to go out on civil affairs missions, and I loved those missions. I'm very proud of what I did over there.
Did you feel well treated? Did you feel well treated, well respected, and equal to the males? What was the?
No, absolutely no. I didn't. I wasn't treated not well by everybody. There wasn't a day that went by that I was not harassed, sexually harassed. It's hard not to be when you're a female. They recognized me from a distance the way I walked. So they knew, you know, at any point where I was, whereas I couldn't blend in.
When you say they, who do you mean?
The men that I worked with every day. If I wanted to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, there was always somebody there. They wanted to talk to me because I was a female. Generally, you know, if you talk too long, the conversation would almost inevitably go to sex, and you would get frustrated at that point.
Was this an inconvenience kind of harassment or dangerous?
Well, I couldn't ask for help, like moving my stuff or getting a ride to the chow hall, because at that point they would expect something from you. Not, you know, 100%, but a lot would. And I did end up, I was assaulted, sexually assaulted, and I did not even intend to tell whenever I came back. But on my third day back from Iraq, it was just, the anger was so great. I knew that I had to report it or I was going to get myself in trouble. I had no idea I'd be so angry whenever I came back, because whenever I left, mm-hmm. I remember flying out of Kuwait and seeing, you know, the outline, you know, with the lights of, you know, the land, and I was just so happy to be leaving. I never dreamed that I would be so angry whenever I came back. It took me a long time not to be angry.
How did the military, your chain of command, respond to your report of what had happened to you?
Very poorly, actually. I was, and that's part of the reason why I never wanted to even report it. I just wanted to go back home because I'm National Guard. You know, I just wanted to get away from it because I felt trapped, you know, there the whole time. You know, you're not able to be yourself, and you know, your mind kind of changes after a while. You know, you have to adjust to the possibility of dying every day, which is a hard thing to get used to, you know, but once you do, you don't think about it every day.
Our time is growing short in this show, and I'm sorry for that. We'd like to hear more, but we thank you for your service, and we thank you for calling today, Georgia caller. Thank you very much for calling in, Kirsten. There's a firsthand report, and not a happy one. Proud of her service, ready to go out where the men were going, not happy with the kind of support she had back at her own base.
Tom, the story she told about her unit not supporting her when she reported the sexual harassment incident, I have an example just like hers in my next book, and it's a case study. These are case studies on how not to handle sexual harassment. And really, the military has got, I mean, if they're going to continue to allow women in the military at all, because it doesn't matter what position you're in the military. It doesn't matter if you're a medic, if you're out on convoys. When women are integrated with the men, there are problems, and the military has got to learn how to deal with this.
Rachel McNeil, Sergeant McNeil, you were 17 when you joined the military. Now you're out, an Iraq War veteran. When you talk to young women, what do you say to them? Do you recommend this as a life path? Do you steer them away from it, somewhere, something in between? What?
You know, I don't really have... I haven't really been in many experiences where someone was considering the military and asking me about it that was a female. And if they were to ask me, I mean, I would definitely tell them it's a man's world. There's definitely a culture in the military of sexism and harassment. You know, it's if a person's strong and they can sort of be resilient to that, if it just maintains at the harassment level, you know, you can kind of deal with it. But it's usually when it moves beyond that, where it, you know, it just depends on the person, what they can deal with and the unit they get into and how effective the leadership is in creating a positive work environment for their soldiers.
And Meg McLagan, director of Lioness, on this Veterans Day, with so many women, almost 200,000 or so have served in this theater since 2001. What attitude do you see when they come home? Are they coming home head high? Do they feel like they've done proud service for their country? What about the ones you spoke with?
Yeah, the women that we've worked with have been very proud of their service, and I think feel like they've been put in situations and they really rose to the occasion in Iraq, especially doing things that they were actually not expecting to do and told they could never do because they were women, and then they did them, and they did them well, and they're proud of that.
You can see it in Meg McLagan's documentary Lioness on PBS stations Thursday night this week. Meg, thanks for being with us, and Sergeant Rachel McNeil, Kirsten Holmstead, author of Band of Sisters, thanks to all of you, and honor and thanks to our veterans on this Veterans Day. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.